The Namesake is the title of the new book by Jhumpa Lahiri. She won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction in 2000, when she was 32, for her first book, the collection of stories titled Interpreter of Maladies. The Namesake is Lahiri's first novel, and as the title suggests, it turns on the question of names, the burden they sometimes impose, the honor they can convey. The story follows two Indian immigrants to America, Ashima and Ashok Ganguly. They have a son, and the father picks the name, Gogol, after the Russian author whose writing he loves. Jhumpa Lahiri says she decided on the name Gogol after thinking back to a cousin in India.
One of his friends in the neighborhood, a Bengali boy, was named Gogol, and it just struck me for some reason, and I just wrote down in a notebook, you know, a boy named Gogol. I sort of thought that that might yield something someday.
What that fragment of an idea yielded is a novel that crosses several decades. The Namesake is the story of immigrant parents struggling to find their place in a culture vastly different from their own, and their despair at being so far away from their homeland. And it's about their son Gogol's rebellion against his name, a name he decides to change.
I think he simply couldn't live with the situation. I imagine him, you know, at a point of feeling that this was an inappropriate name for him, that it didn't represent who he was, that he was ashamed, embarrassed, and so on. And I think that he was at a place in his life that enabled him to step away from the world that his parents had given him.
The question of names and naming circulates throughout the book. You write about it also in terms of Gogol's parents. The wife in the arranged marriage is named Ashima. Mm-hmm. And you write that she never calls her husband by his given name. And I wonder if you could read from the part of the book. It's at the very beginning on page 2.
When she calls out to Ashok, she doesn't say his name. Ashima never thinks of her husband's name when she thinks of her husband, even though she knows perfectly well what it is. She has adopted his surname, but refuses, for propriety's sake, to utter his first. It's not the type of thing Bengali wives do. Like a kiss or a caress in a Hindi movie, a husband's name is something intimate and therefore unspoken, cleverly patched over. And so, instead of saying Ashok's name, she utters the interrogative that has come to replace it, which translates roughly as, "Are you listening to me?"
It's a fascinating idea that the name would be unspoken.
Well, that's something that I observed in my own family, not only with my mother and father, but with many of my aunts and uncles and my parents' friends. It's considered very forward for a wife to call her husband by his first name. And, you know, my mother has never called my father by his first name. If she talks to me about him, she'll say, "Your father," or "Baba," which is what I call him. If she talks to an American person, she'll refer to him as Mr. Lahiri. If she's talking to his younger brother, she'll say, "Your older brother." I mean, it's specific to the relationship of the other person and not her relationship to him. And this idea of, "Are you listening to me?" That's something actually that my aunt, the mother of the cousin with the Gogol friend, you can see what a tight family we are. She always calls her husband by this interrogative phrase, and we laugh about it. You know, it's sort of become his name.
What is the Bengali word or phrase that translates to "Are you listening to me?"
Shuncho. Are you listening? Shuncho.
There's a good section of this book where Gogol is struggling with his relationship with his parents while he's in college and afterward, and wanting to be someone else. He moves to New York. He becomes an architect. He gets involved with a woman whose family could not be more different from his own, who's not Indian, and he's really running from them in any way he can.
Yes.
I think a lot of people can understand that motivation, no matter where they're from. It's pretty universal.
I hope so. I hope some of the things in this book are more universal, that it's not just a matter of rejecting one culture for another culture, but really this is, I think, what happens to us as we grow and become adults, that many of us are sort of compelled for whatever reason to reject our background and to claim life on your own terms, but there's so much that you are given that's hard to ever step away from.
Gogol's parents in the book struggle with this question of fitting in and feeling tugs with their home country back in India, but while living in this country. And especially it's his mother, who's very much on her own. Her husband's a professor at a university, but she leads a very solitary life. And I wonder if you could read from the bottom of page 49 when she's thinking about what it means and how it feels to be an outsider in this culture.
For being a foreigner, Ashima is beginning to realize, is a sort of lifelong pregnancy, a perpetual weight, a constant burden, a continuous feeling out of sorts. It is an ongoing responsibility, a parenthesis in what had once been ordinary life, only to discover that the previous life has vanished, replaced by something more complicated and demanding. Like pregnancy, being a foreigner, Ashima believes, is something that elicits the same curiosity from strangers, the same combination of pity and respect.
Pity and respect. Such an interesting tension there.
Well, I wasn't pregnant when I wrote that. I didn't know what it was like to be pregnant, but I imagined, I certainly feel that that was applicable in many ways to people's reactions to my parents and their background, sort of a curiosity, but at the same time, sort of, you know, poor you, things aren't as easy for you as they could be, you know, and I think, you know, when you see a woman who's 8.5 months pregnant and you think, wow, she's got life inside of her, what a powerful, amazing thing to behold, but at the same time you think, my God, her back must be killing her and no one's giving her a seat on the subway, you know. To me, at least, I have that combination of that same reaction.
The story in your novel unravels over the course of decades. It starts in 1968. It continues up to the present time. And there are a lot of places where there's a gap in the story, where you leave things out deliberately.
Well, I don't know if it was a deliberate decision, but to me, the book came very much in slices. I envisioned the narrative sort of akin to the experience of riding on a train and that feeling you have of, you know, sort of moving through life, and then occasionally you glance out the window and you see something specific that's marking time. I didn't want it to get too bogged down with too many details in a way. I just wanted to select the things that I thought could tell the story of this family in those years as best as I could.
Well, Jhumpa Lahiri, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Jhumpa Lahiri's new novel is titled The Namesake.